many people want to do what they can to live a more eco-friendly life and to have a smaller carbon footprint if they can. Some choices are pretty easy, like changing to more energy-efficient light bulbs, and some can even save you money, like buying a car that gets better gas mileage.
But it turns out that the changes that an individual can make that have the most impact are also some of the hardest for people to decide to do.
Seth Wines co-authored a new study in the journal Environmental Research Letters that looks at what individual actions have the most return. He's a former high school science teacher from Ontario who left teaching to research climate change mitigation, and he's currently a PhD student at the University of British Columbia. Seth, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. It's great to be on with you.
So when we talk about climate mitigation, what do we mean exactly?
Well, we've got this really big problem that our planet is warming, and we know with a great degree of certainty that it's caused by human actions, releasing fossil fuels into our atmosphere. So to mitigate that means, even though we already know that the planet has started warming, we would be much better off if it warmed less. It would be a safer planet for our children to live on. And so reducing our use of fossil fuels, reducing greenhouse gases, mitigates that problem.
And so is the goal slowing down that warming, or at least not increasing the rate? Is that the best that we can hope to do at this point?
That's right. We're already locked into a certain amount of warming, but definitely every contribution helps, and we can be in a much better place if we react quickly to slow down emissions as best as we can right now.
When we look at what is contributing to climate change and whose actions are involved, can you maybe put into perspective for us what is coming from the everyday life of individuals and, let's say, in the developed world? And I'm thinking particularly in contrast to the impact of, say, companies and industries and large organizations like governments and the military.
Right. So each Canadian produces around 15 tons of carbon dioxide every year. And that's maybe a little above average, even for a developed country. You can go to other countries like Germany, where they're only at 9 tons per capita. And I think it's really important to realize that that difference doesn't come with a severe loss in lifestyle, that it's possible to live a good life with reduced emissions, as they are doing. Now, in other places around the world, emissions are much, much smaller, on the order of just 2 tons per capita in many developing countries. So there is a big difference there. Certainly, the difference that an individual can make is much smaller than the decisions that a government can make. Governments and industries are in charge of huge decisions and huge amounts of resources, but our research is focused on what can an individual do? And the way that I would look at that is that most of these industries, the pollution that they create is because of demand from consumers. Mm. So the pollution is two sides of the same coin. We can look at, let's say, a car manufacturer and say, well, this gigantic business is creating so much emissions. But that car manufacturer exists to serve the needs of people who want cars. And the same goes for fossil fuel companies. That oil that they bring out of the ground and the energy that they use to do it, it's on a scale of magnitude that's much larger than anything that an individual can control. But they're responding to the demands of individuals who want to drive cars. So there are two ways of looking at the problem, and I think it's important that both players step up and do their part to solve this problem, individuals and governments and industry.
And I just want to back up for a second. You said that for the average Canadian, it's 15 ton, carbon tons a year. Is the U.S. pretty close?
Yeah, they're definitely right there with us. Mm-hmm. It depends on how you measure it, whether you're going to be including things like land use change, so cutting down forests. So some measurements don't include that, others do, and that'll give you a little bit of a different answer. But we're really neck and neck in terms of leading the world in a category that we don't want to be leading.
So let's dig into what you and your study co-author, Kimberly Nicholas of Sweden's Lund University, identified as the four individual choices that would have the most impact in living that greener, that smaller carbon footprint life. And the first is a really significant one. It's having fewer children. How big an impact is the lifespan of one person?
Well, the way we looked at this even goes beyond the lifespan of a single person, because when we were evaluating any of these actions, we used something called a life cycle approach. So we wanted to take the fullest account of the effectiveness of that action. So we're saying not just what is the effect of adding another child, but also of the children that that child will likely go on to have, and their children and so on. So it can be quite large. The average that we reported, based on a study, and our value is only for developed nations, was 58.6 tons per person, or per child added. But it's important to realize that while this was a major finding and the biggest of all of the actions that we looked at, it assumes constant emissions. So it assumes that our society is just going to keep going producing the same amount of emissions. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it from a future where governments and industries and people act quickly and reduce emissions to a place where we're not increasing planetary warming beyond a safe 2 degrees Celsius, that single number can drop by up to 17 times. So we can reduce the impact of having larger families by making some of these other choices that we talk about.
Even with the other choices, how big a difference would lowering the birth rate of a developed country by even a fraction of a percentage point mean in terms of climate change mitigation?
Well, we didn't look at these actions from a policy perspective. We looked at them from what are the most important things that an individual can do, because an individual isn't responsible for birth rates or things like that. That takes into account so many different factors and is beyond the scope of our study. But we wanted to know what were the most important things that one person can do, and the things we found were that they can have smaller families, they can live car-free, they can avoid air travel, and they can eat a plant-based diet.
We're talking with Seth Wines right now. He's a PhD student at the University of British Columbia researching climate change mitigation, and he's the co-author of a recent story that is, or a recent article that is looking at how individuals can make the biggest impact on climate change. Now, you just mentioned another of the top four, Seth, and that is living without a car. That's also a tall order for some people, especially in the U.S. and I'm guessing in Canada, where so many rural and suburban residents really have to rely on them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There are certain structural barriers in place for a lot of individuals where if they're living in a suburban area or in a rural area, it can be hard to adopt those actions. And so what we would suggest is that if people in those situations are evaluating their carbon footprint and really trying to make big cuts, one thing that they can do is to drive a more efficient car. So pick something that's fuel efficient. Instead of a big SUV, go with a compact vehicle, go with a hybrid. If you can, even go with an electric car. And the other option is to look at other areas of your life to think, could I try out a plant-based diet? Could I cut out one flight from my yearly travel? And those things can make a big difference as well.
And I would think also encouraging their policymakers and the politicians who are making that policy to prioritize planning and infrastructure that would make it more possible, at least for more people, to be able to cut down on how much they rely on an individual vehicle.
You're absolutely right. There are a lot of different infrastructure choices that can be made. Governments can invest in public transit so that people have access to them. When governments plan cities, they can make them denser so that it's easier to walk in them. If a city is filled with parking lots, that means there's a lot of space in between two different destinations. But if you remove that and instead plan things to be close together, then people can bike to work every day. They can at least have that option.
Seth Wines researches climate change mitigation at the University of British Columbia. He co-authored a paper that outlines the steps that individuals can take to cut down on their own carbon footprint.
And we'd love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you consciously make lifestyle choices based at least in part on how you can live a greener life? What are some of the changes that you've made? And would you be willing to have fewer, maybe no children for the environment? And if you did consider that when you were planning a family, we'd love to hear about that. And what about living without a car? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're picking up our conversation about the four changes our guest says each of us could make that would have the biggest positive impact on the environment.
And we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you try to use your car as little as possible? What about your diet? Eating a mainly vegetarian diet is best for the environment. Is that a step you're willing to take? What about not taking long flights for fun? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And so another one in the top four is, for some people, easy. For others, pretty hard. Eating a plant-based, mostly vegetarian diet. And Seth, why does that make it into the top four changes that individuals can make?
It makes it in for a few different reasons. One of them is that certain types of livestock, such as cows, produce a lot of methane, and methane is a very potent greenhouse gas that can warm the atmosphere even more than carbon dioxide. So that can be part of it, and people can also reduce their diet without giving up meat simply by switching from beef to pork or poultry. But all kinds of meat are really an inefficient way to change plant calories into meat calories. So if we were to take the same amount of land and just grow plants for humans to eat, we wouldn't need to take up so much space as we do because of our heavy reliance on animal agriculture. So that freed up space can be used to feed more people. We have a growing population on Earth, and that's a concern for the future. That space can also be used for biofuels, which are another way to mitigate climate change, or simply preserving our natural environment around us so that we're not cutting down pristine forests so that we have those wild spaces to enjoy.
Let's take a call now from Lynn in Winona, Minnesota. Lynn, hi.
Hi there. As the speaker started, I actually have watched several documentaries about the massive farms, and I'm going towards more of a plant-based diet, not only to help the environment, but to curb my cancer rate and my diabetes chances. So I will pose another question. The machines that they're developing, I've heard they're trying to develop machines to take emissions out of the air, but they can come into the billions of dollars. Can I have the author just kind of comment on those machines and what he knows about those?
Thanks for that call, Lynn. And Seth, is that something you're able to comment on?
Well, first of all, I just want to thank Lynn for her call and say that that's really encouraging to hear that she's taking up those lifestyle choices. And I think she's hit upon something important about those lifestyle choices as well, that they can be really positive for other reasons, that they can be great for your health. And that goes for not just eating a plant-based diet, which she identified, but also living car-free. In terms of taking emissions out of the atmosphere, she's right. These are complicated chemical reactions that scientists are working hard to study.
Is this carbon capture? Is that what it is?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And so a lot of these different methods haven't been proven at large scales. We do have a method of capturing carbon that has been proven at very large scales, and that's planting trees. So a very similar, more simple option that's also good for the environment, but in order to plant more trees, we need more space, which ties into eating a plant-based diet. As for other forms of carbon capture and storage, I would just say we haven't perfected them yet, so individuals who don't want to rely on unproven technologies can still play their part by doing these other positive things. as Lynn has started doing.
Thanks for that call in at 800-642-1234. And Seth, the fourth of the top four that you and your co-author identified is one that probably affects people of a higher economic level a little more than others, and it's avoiding transatlantic flights. And what kind of carbon footprint is involved in one flight, say, from the continental U.S. or Canada to Europe?
Yeah, so that's about 1.6 tons for a single return flight. That's worth, it's 8 years of comprehensive recycling. Not to say that recycling is a bad thing, it's a really positive step in the right direction, but you just see the importance of some of these actions based on that magnitude.
And I just want to clarify that. Is that amount of carbon shared among all the people on the flight, or that's for every person on the flight?
That's for every person on the flight.
Wow. And so this one seems really important to say that while there are certainly a lot of individuals that do fly for fun, myself included, stacking it up against business travel, and I would say military use a lot of aircraft as well, it feels like there's a huge chunk that's coming from that individuals don't have as much influence over.
Yeah, you're right. And I think I said before, we all need to get on side with trying to combat climate change, and so institutions can do it as well. People who work for businesses can sometimes use their influence to try and reduce their air travel, so that might look like using high-speed rail if it's available to get to a meeting instead. In other areas, it might be trying to promote video conferencing as a technology that your company can use. That's a good investment for a company. It doesn't cost nearly as much as a long-haul flight to buy some high-quality video conferencing equipment and then use it again and again repeatedly. So it's a good thing for companies to look at. It's also good for the environment.
Let's go back to the phones, and Rachel in Duluth, Minnesota is up. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. I'm calling because I have seen a graphic about this study multiple times on my Facebook page, and I'm also someone who teaches environmental science at the college level for non-science majors. So I'm constantly covering the same sort of information. So when I first found out, when I was in college, how many people were on the planet and what that meant and what a replacement rate was of 2.1, I was like, okay, I'm not having more than two kids. And now that I'm hearing more and more about it, you know, I'm starting to consider adoption a lot more. I'm 28, so I'm, you know, we haven't decided as a couple, I'm married, you know, what we're going to do for sure, but it's definitely playing into that. We started using a more plant-based diet. We probably only have meat 3 to 4 times a week. I try to drive less. Unfortunately, where I live, taking the bus turns my commute from a 20-minute drive to a 40-minute bus ride, and if I miss it, I have to wait for an hour. So unfortunately, that infrastructure isn't there. And I love traveling, especially internationally, so that plane one is hard for me, but I'm trying to reduce it to just, like, one trip every 2 years and trying to just, like, plan ahead when I will use a plane. So I just wanted to comment that I'm someone who's trying to do those things, and I try to use my examples in class to show my students that this is possible, and I'm still a human, and I still live a perfectly comfortable life doing those things.
Well, thanks so much for that call, Rachel. And Seth, you know, Rachel is really, you know, not only walking the walk, but also teaching it to others, and you come from an education background. Is that kind of one of the best things we can do, is to be an example to others?
Yeah, spreading awareness is definitely an effective thing. Being, we call it a catalytic individual, someone that other people can look to and say, oh, like Rachel is, you know, she's tried eating a plant-based diet and she doesn't seem miserable. In fact, she maybe seems happier and healthier. Who knows, right? And I think what Rachel described is what a lot of my friends and colleagues who have come to terms with what it means to be an environmentalist in this modern age have also gone through, and that's going through and making some of these hard choices, but also enjoying some of the good things that come with it. And so some of those good things might be taking a long train ride and exploring your local continent instead of going overseas all of the time. It might be trying out a new recipe with your partner and getting excited to do new foods. So, yeah, that was very encouraging. And, Rachel, I just want to encourage you to keep going and keep having those positive discussions with your students.
Well, and one thing I want to also highlight in what Rachel said, Seth, is that, you know, she's not being militant about it. She's trying to eat less meat, and she's trying to drive her car less, and trying to maybe take a flight every 2 years instead of every 1 year. I think what's kind of overwhelming sometimes is feeling like you have to make all the changes 100% right away.
That's right, especially if they're all changes for you. I mean, some people are coming at it and they say, all right, I'm already a vegetarian. I don't own a car because I live in New York and it's harder to own one than to not. But for other people, maybe Rachel included, they're starting at a different point. Now, maybe some of them are starting at a point of they've been recycling for years and they're looking for some next steps to take. And so introducing these lifestyle changes can be really positive. I think another aspect that Rachel hit upon is it's harder to make these decisions once you've established your lifestyle, which is why we talk about discussing these in educational documents, because for someone who's 16 and has not bought their first car, they can still make some of these choices in a more impactful way, where they can say, okay, I'm going to choose to live close to where I work to avoid some of those other issues that would make it harder to live out a sustainable lifestyle.
Well, Seth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I had a really good time. Thank you so much.
Seth Wines is currently a PhD student at the University of British Columbia studying climate change mitigation. He joined us to talk about a recent article that he co-authored that looks at the highest impact changes individuals can make to live in a more eco-friendly way. And we'd still love to hear what you think and which of these you might be thinking about adopting by going over to the Central Time Facebook page. Tell us what you think and see what others have to say.